And hi, I'm Doug Keck, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. Each week, we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe with a different host and a different focus. This week, our subject is theology, the topic, profit versus the proletariat. What's a Catholic to think? Today, we are joined by EW10 host, the dynamic deacon, Harold Burke Sivers. He joins us from Oregon. We also have with us EW10 TV and radio host legend, Father Mitch Pacwa. He's with us from his Scripture and Tradition show set right here in Irondale, Alabama, and as always, joined by EW10's Vice President of Theology, Colin Donovan. He is in our theology studio. Welcome, gentlemen. I appreciate you making the time for the Catholic Sphere.
You're welcome.
And speaking of our topic, it kind of dovetails with the idea, it's the economy, stupid. The idea we hear all the time inside the church, things that have to do with economic things. Let me ask you, Deacon Harold, why is the church involved with economic issues? What is its right place, and are there places where maybe it's not as right?
Yeah, so the word economy, and Father Mitch can correct my Greek here, comes from the word oikonomia, which means the workings of. So ultimately, the economy is not so much about money, in so much as about God's working in salvation. Right. And everything flows from that reality. So in a free market economy is good insofar it is subordered to a strong judicial framework and what's called economic personalism. So in other words, from a religious cultural perspective, we're not just, kind of this atheist materialism, which is highly advanced mechanisms. We have a human uniqueness that can't be reduced to just mechanical, just mechanisms, right? There's a reality of who we are in God and our responsibility to our brothers and sisters in a thriving of human culture. That is united to what's called a strong judicial framework. So this places the economy at the service of human freedom in its totality, right? So in much the same way that a personalist democracy works, authentic freedom comes from aligning oneself with the truth. Right? What does Jesus Christ say? I am the way, the truth, and the life. So the truth is not an idea or just a philosophical construct. It's a person, right? Because that truth moves us to our ultimate end. Now, that is seen within the context of economic personalism. So the free market is at the service of human freedom, where John Paul II says, Dignitatis Humanae, it's advancing the teachings of the church through this lens of creating an economic culture where everyone thrives because our individuality and our purpose of moving everyone toward their ultimate end based on the truth of who Jesus is and what that means in our life, that becomes the foundation for how we structure and order society. Again, not forcing our faith on others, but saying there's this foundational framework from which we root ourselves, that moves us toward our ultimate end, and that's where we get true justice, freedom, and economic benefit for everyone. Because it's not just about what's good for me, what's good for the state. It's about how we can all thrive as a community.
Right. Let me ask you, Father Mitch, as you move into the idea of profit, as we talk about in the title of this particular program, is money itself evil? Is it okay to have more than some others? Is that really fair? Should everything be the same? How do you deal with that as a Catholic?
The issue with something like money is whether or not money is your goal, and then it's a dumb goal. What a dumb thing to set as your objective. Or do you see it as a tool? And then what do you see it as a tool to help you accomplish? Seeing money, and not only money, money is a symbol of wealth. But to see wealth itself as a tool. There's the basics that you need it as a tool to keep yourself alive, with enough clothing to stay warm and enough housing and food and drink to keep yourself together. And then when you have larger responsibilities like family, then you also take care of them. and get them involved in the economy. But it's also a tool, as every parent, whoever gives an allowance to a child, not that the child earns it, but they give them an allowance based on doing various chores. This becomes also a tool to teach responsibility, and also becomes a tool to help encourage people to be creative in making more wealth, to become clever. Like the servants in Matthew 25 who invested the talents. And remember, a talent was 65 pounds of gold or silver. And they invested it and became clever. And they are commended by Christ for being wise, and they are given more responsibilities. These are the objects, and money and wealth is the tool. We have to keep it in that perspective. Mm-hmm. How do we develop human creativity and responsibility as well as security? It's a tension between security of having enough to live on and creativity to take risks. This is one of the reasons that because it is so complex, the economy is very rich and very complex and is constantly adjusting itself to new needs and circumstances that it requires humans with a lot of different experience to be able to use that security, creativity, and responsibility factors together with other people to build up an economy. And this ends up being something that helps people become more fully human as a result.
Right, absolutely. And of course, some people would say that, you know, over the last 100 years, certainly in the Western nations, we've seen better economies, at least for the people living in it. And some would say that that's a function of the particular capitalist or somewhat capitalist approach to things. But things can be carried away either way. You get, you know, radical capitalism. But the response sometimes isn't to figure out how to make that work better. It can be to go to the other end of this kind of collectivism at the same time, which we even see in some ways in the early church, and, you know, with people coming together, and which is why sometimes people say, well, see, Christianity, they're really about collectivism. They were really, the early church, they were really socialists, weren't they?
No, but it illustrates maybe one polarity of this, and that is in the social teachings, whether it's from Leo the 13th up to our day, you will find this idea of the universal destination of goods balanced against the need or the recognition that private property is the best way to manage those goods for the individual purposes of families and individuals and so on. And that's a balancing of all that the Deacon and Father Mitch just talked about, and that how individuals flourishing and individuals are the goal and not the money itself or the wealth itself. Wealth transcends the category of money because it's also virtue and holiness and ultimately the possession of God. What greater wealth will we have than that? So I think there's always ending up in a direction that I like this term used very well. I heard it many years ago from Fulton Sheen. I don't think he coined it. Homo economicus, the economic man, if you will. Today we might talk about the sexualized man. But he was speaking in the economic context, and that is where man is primarily about the economy. Man is primarily about, as we talked in the program we did last month, about the collectivist view, where the state is supreme and everything serves is a cog in the state. And then at the other end, you have the individual view, where everything is about me, is about my own personal wealth. And yes, I can have largesse and share it and give it away and set up foundations. But, you know, that's still really about me in the end. In most of these cases that we see in our society around us, it's very often about the you know, the personality of the person giving it away. Whereas the church's view is a balance of these things, because the moral good is usually a mean between two extremes. And so we have to keep coming back to that and to this idea that what is the moral value of decisions? Yes, work, profit, business, and in John Paul even noted free market seems to be the best way for the distribution of resources. But is it always done in a moral way? And of course it isn't. And I think as we see in our own country, we evolved from the, you know, the tremendous vertical monopolies of the end of the 19th century, early 20th century, and the government recognizing, well, there had to be some corralling of that because they could price things the way they wanted. And so it is a moving target. And that's because our lives are moving targets, and there always has to be the adjustments that we've talked about, where we're humanly always adjusting it to the circumstances of our day. But as long as we're avoiding the extremes and we're seeking the true idea of what wealth is, not just money, but personal wealth, the personalist view, then we're going to be on track and we'll be able to make it work. And that is always going to be a little bit different for every generation and in the economy every year even.
Right. Deacon Harold, you think about even things with the early church, and I always think about, you know, the widows and orphans and looking after them. But there seems to be even an idea in society today that each individual, ultimately, I'm entitled to be taken care of. That, you know, I don't really have a lot of responsibilities, these things, one way or the other. You know, the state needs to take care of me, or the church needs to take care of me. Is that the appropriate way to think about it?
No, absolutely not, because that what that is entitlement. Mm-hmm. So let me give an example from the realm of entrepreneurship. So when I made the decision to leave my law enforcement career back in 2012, I said, well, what's the best structure for me to be able to fulfill what God has planned for my life? Notice, as Father Mitch so beautifully said, how can I multiply my talents? It's not about how much money I can make, how so I can buy a big house or a car and just have kind of this individualistic view of wealth. But it's, as Colin so beautifully said, it's holistic. So I'm thinking, okay, what talents and skills has God has given me? How do I use those talents and skills to really become the person who God created me to be? Mm-hmm. And how do I generate wealth, not becoming wealthy in a materialist sense, but how do I generate wealth so I can give myself away so I can truly find myself in God? So the way I did that is I set up four little companies, all three, one nonprofit and three for-profit companies, LLCs. And I did that because there are different ways of generating revenue for the family, which worked out beautifully during the pandemic, because when I couldn't speak anymore because I couldn't travel, right, these other three companies brought in wealth. And now why do I do that? One, to be able to take care of my family, but two, to provide opportunities for others to be upbuilt in the faith. What do I mean by that? What I do is I take part of the revenue that I generate and I put it into a fund. So if a parish calls me and says, look, we're a poor parish, we really can't afford you to come here, but we'd love you for you to come. But I'm not going to say no because you can't afford me. I'm going to use some of that wealth that was generated from my other endeavors, mm-hmm, and use that to travel at my own expense, mm-hmm, to travel to this other parish to pay all my expenses on my own. And I just, you know, and they just do a free will offering. It doesn't matter how much is collected. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is that I set things up in such a way, not to think about myself, what opportunities can I create to create wealth, to be able to generate and share that wealth with others. So this individual freedom that I have to entrepreneurship allows the human flourishing for me and my family, so that, mm-hmm, I can help be a benefit, right, in the lives of others. So, but it's not fair to say that someone works for me should be paid as much as I do. I'm the one who took the risk. I'm the one who put the money into it. But I should be able to pay those who work for me a fair wage, mm-hmm, you know, medical benefits, all those things, so that they can thrive, right, in the way that God is, right, is destined for them in their human flourishing. So I think that's the whole point of it. It's not the state takes care of me. Mm-hmm. But what can I do, whether it's entrepreneurship or working for someone, where I can use my gifts and talents to their maximum fulfillment, looking toward the eschatological goal, right? Is how is this helping me head toward that beatific vision, the final fulfillment of our life in God in heaven?
Now, Father Mitch, let me ask you, since you're the biblical scholar here on the panel, you know, sometimes people point and they say, well, what about the workers in the vineyard in the field and those who came later got paid the same as those who came earlier? You know, it was all the same. It was, you know, they got the wage they were promised and the other ones got the wage that they were promised. The other people thought that was unfair. They had worked harder. They had done more. Mm-hmm. But yet this is how the Lord thinks. Explain that.
You're dealing with a certain kind of situation where there had been a verbal contract, which is the way contracts were made for the most part, and our Lord chooses to be generous. And in that parable, he is focusing on the generosity of God toward everybody. And in particular, he's dealing with people. For instance, in the Maronite rite, we use that as a way to understand how the prophets came at the first hour, the apostles came at the sixth hour, the martyrs came at the fourth hour, ninth hour, mm-hmm. and then the repentant sinners come at the 11th hour. But it's about everybody ultimately depending on God's generosity. Mm-hmm. Where that comes to apply is that everybody, no matter how rich or how poor you are, you have to realize it is God who created the grains and the meats and the vegetables and all the other things. You receive that as a gift. Mm-hmm. And economically, the earth itself is a gift. So you don't really earn it, no matter how long you work here. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's a balancing paragraph, a parable, excuse me, with the three servants who earn talents, or in the case of the third one, right, who buries the talent and takes no initiative. Mm-hmm. That focuses on the other aspect, that the Lord gives us responsibility and we have to exercise that responsibility. Mm-hmm. So, and again, every parent should understand this. None of their babies deserve anything they get from their parents. They do it because they love them. That's that first paragraph. No matter if you're the first kid or the last kid, you get your food and love and clothes and all this other stuff. Though if you're the last kid, you probably don't get as many photographs as the first one.
Absolutely.
They don't care if you can walk after
it a while. It does tend to work that way, doesn't it?
But at the same time, any good parent also wants to encourage their kids to be responsible and creative, mm-hmm. and develop their talents or else.
Right. And as Father Mitch was saying, Colin, in thinking about our Lord's generosity, it's the idea that we should know it's out there, but we shouldn't be necessarily always counting on it, thinking that's going to bail us out, that we have a certain responsibility ourselves in how we use the gifts we've been given, right?
We do. There's an old proverb which is attributed to St. Augustine, but almost everybody disputes that it was St. Augustine because I don't think you could find it in any of his writings. Mm-hmm. Work as if everything depended upon you. Pray as if everything depended upon God. Mm-hmm. In other words, your human responsibility as a creature, as a child of God, mm-hmm. is to become the person he wants you to be, to do what's necessary for yourself, for your family, for your society, for your culture. And we can have many kinds of identities in that respect. You know, I'm largely Irish and Scottish. Others have African and American or Polish and other things. We can be proud and be engaged about all of our sort of individual levels of identity. But in the end, we are part of the larger whole that God created of mankind and of the broader creation. And we should always have an eye on that as to how I fit in there. And that demands of us responsibility, because nobody's going to do that personal work for us. We have to do it ourselves. And that means looking out for ourselves, but trusting in God when we simply don't have the resources, maybe of age, of personal medical condition or disability, or whatever it might be, we don't have the resources to take care of ourselves or others, to trust in God and that in His plan there is a solution to these problems. Maybe a human solution providentially brought to our service, but nonetheless that there is a solution. But we do what we can do because that's what He expects of us. And that's the reasonable thing to do.
So Deacon Harold, when we're dealing with this kind of situation in our lives, you know, a lot of people, you know, want the state to do this for people and the state to do that for people, rather than actually Catholic charities or certainly Catholics and Christians themselves making their own charitable gifts, which is really what the Lord is asking us to do, is to take our resources and do that, not necessarily vote for people who will take your money away from you and then decide what to do with it. That's not really charity. It maybe is needed in certain situations, but really we're called for our own charitable giving, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, what the state has to allow is for the principle of subsidiarity to work, right? So the church and culture has established mediating institutions that are particularly proficient at providing the needs for others, so like Catholic charities and organizations like that. So what the state should allow, instead of absolutizing the resources, of, you know, just distributing amongst themselves, allow or provide resources for these mediating institutions to be able to do what they do best, working at the lowest level to be able to provide the services that for individuals and societies that allow for human flourishing. You know, I think that's the key. So the state can't be parent, can't be mother and father, especially when it comes to economics. Because look, my job is to make sure that my kids can live independently. Right. Yes. As Father Mitch so beautifully said, you know, we provide everything for them to a point. Then they go out into the world and they make their way on their own for themselves. Now, hopefully in that process, we provided not just a model for them on how to create wealth, but also doing it way, as Colin so beautifully said, you know, virtuously. Right. There's a teleology to all of this. There's a meaning and a purpose for existence. You know, and so when we work within the economic framework, we're doing that in a sense to create independence, to create wealth, not for myself, but creating in such a way that benefits all of society. And so, you know, politics is, and you know, because politicians are elected to do what? For the common good. Mm-hmm. What is good for everyone? Not as what's good for me, not what's good for my constituents. What is the best for the people that we serve, right? Touching that beautiful natural moral law that God has planted in everyone that's been created. And so we have that positive or human law that comes out of that allows for human flourishing, even in the economic sphere. So that's why it's so important that we're talking about this, particularly now, where we seem to be moving in a direction in our country, in our world, where we're absolutizing economics.
Absolutely. And Father Mitch, and the idea of pitting one group against another, even with this kind of profit versus the proletariat, this kind of intersectionality that's all across where, you know, everybody fits into a particular group. And depending on how many intersections you got, you've got a better grievance story than somebody else. Isn't that a control mechanism that is used many times in societies?
Absolutely. And it's very important to remember, no matter which political party you're talking about, at the top, there are multi billionaires on both sides. One party can say, well, we're for the working class and we're against the rich. No, you are operated by the rich. It's just a different set of rich guys from the other party, and they don't like each other. That's the part of the political reality. Meanwhile, they think they're manipulating us and getting us pitted against each other so we don't observe. And the basic issue that they have is, does a politician encourage us to grow in responsibility and creativity so that we can sustain our own lives? Or do they discourage that and keep us at a certain level? This is one of the reasons that something like the welfare system is a catastrophe. You cannot become rich on welfare. If you do get wealthy, it's because you're doing a business on the side, that's or under the table, more likely, because they don't let you make money and live in public housing without increasing your rent. They try to keep people down at a certain level. And this is where you say, which politicians are helping me to become wealthier and more responsible and creative, or which ones are making sure that they buy my votes and keep me down at a certain level? This is a very important element. Creative people will create more wealth. And the history of science and technology is, if you are creative, you will increase wealth and make it less environmentally damaging to do so. We accomplish much more today than we did with less materials than we did in the past.
Absolutely.
This is a great principle. And again, take a look at the cell phone versus the big phone on my grandmother's wall.
Right, absolutely. In the last minute and a half, Colin, maybe you can wrap things up and bring it together, talking about, in a sense, the importance of grace and freedom in the moral decisions related to these economic issues.
Well, like the political issue and anything you want to talk about in our cultural life, our social life, freedom is necessary because we've been given the gift of freedom by God. He didn't give it to take it away. He gave it for us to use properly and appropriately. And that's the moral dimension that goes along with freedom. It's not an individualistic freedom. It is a freedom for the true and the good. And so that's how we have to use it. And so, you know, the common good, which we've used that term as the church has defined it, has that respect at the core of it. And that is the freedom of life. Life was created, it ought to be respected. And that's the dignity of the individual created. Our common good today is often to, and put in quotes there, to attack life and the dignity of the individual. It's marriage and family, the central principle, the central society of every society. And yet our common good, in quotes, today is often to attack the centrality of marriage and family in our culture. And the third one is freedom itself, primarily the freedom to educate, the parents to educate and raise their children according to their own their morality in a true and proper way, of course, in a human way. And the other freedoms that flow from that, the freedom right. of thought and so on. So all of these are under attack on the title of common good. They're collectivized, as we've said, right. and making everything surrender up its own individuality to that collective in these
Very
regards.
Good. We have the economy of time and we have run out. Thank you so much, Colin Donovan, and of course, yourself and Father Mitch and Deacon Harold for all joining us today for this lively discussion. And thank you for joining us. Don't forget to join us next week when their host will be Ryan Penny here on the Catholic Sphere. We appreciate you stopping by. See you next time.